With us now on the Revel Wireless Hotline is Tom Withers from the Associated Press. Tom, I hope you and your family had a great holiday weekend.
We did, Vic. I hope yours did as well.
Thank you, man, and glad to have you with us. It's been a little bit, but want to get into what this Browns team did through the offseason so far, the most recent addition being Jason Campbell at quarterback, but the most recent subtraction being Colt McCoy going to San Francisco, and definitely a connection between those two moves. But how this, I think, puts the where it puts the quarterback picture for this football team.
Yeah, you know, once again, the quarterback carousel is moving in Cleveland. When does it ever stop, Vic?
Yeah,
you know, I think we all saw this coming with Colt McCoy. Frankly, I was a little surprised that it didn't happen last year. I think the Browns probably looked for a trading partner at one point for Colt and were unable to find one. But I think it's a real win-win for everybody if you look at it. I mean, you know, for McCoy, he gets a chance for a fresh start out in San Francisco, a team that, you know, obviously is right on the doorstep of possibly winning a Super Bowl. They certainly were last year. And he gets to start to, you know, jumpstart his career. So good for Colt. And, you know, he did a lot here in terms of, you know, was a good guy, a good locker room guy, you know, gave it all that he had on the field. Unfortunately, I think a lot of us are probably going to remember the James Harrison hit as a defining moment of Colt McCoy's career. But he also, you know, during 2011, engineered a couple of comebacks. I still think there's a pretty, you know, pretty wide, you know, spectrum of fans out there who believe that Colt McCoy didn't get a fair chance with this organization, and you could probably make a pretty compelling argument to support that. So, yeah, you know, once again, the Browns are discarding quarterbacks and bringing in new ones.
Yeah, that is probably as much as anything else. It's a great point to make on why a team is still trying to find consistency and success, and I think it's two areas. Have the right quarterback is the number one area, but have the head coach also in place for long enough, and it tends to work out that when you don't have one of those things, the quarterback thing, the head coach thing tends to change as well. So the Browns looking to get some traction here, finally, from what they have with Brandon Whedon, if they can get it there. But to go back to Colt, you know, I think you're right that he's got tremendous popularity. People love him. I think from a personal standpoint, they see the toughness. They see the guy who works hard to overachieve. They see a guy who defied some odds as a rookie back in 2010 when he got out there and had some exciting performances. And as you say, people wanting to see more of Colt, wanting more of a guy who to get greater opportunity. But I just think, again, it's not, and I say this just in the context of a football view, that there were limitations to what he brings to the table, and I think
though
that's what became so evident to me really in 2011.
I'm with you, Vic. I mean, none of us thought, first of all, that Colt would be on the field in 2010, and had it not been, you know, for the injuries to DeLome and Wallace, we might not have seen Colt McCoy on the field in 2010. And then 2011, you know, he did some really nice things out there. There were some moments where you thought, hey, you know what? Maybe this is the guy for the future. Maybe this is the quarterback that can take this team to the next level. But then, you know, obviously once Brandon Whedon was selected, and then I think for any of us who would watch Brandon Whedon and Colt McCoy throw side by side on a daily basis, it was pretty obvious that there was a big physical gap between the two, and particularly when you had an offense that you were going to try to run like that. And, you know, when you stack up McCoy's numbers against Whedon's, they're comparable, but there were also some other things taking place that make those numbers not necessarily line up. You know, he had different offensive systems. I do feel bad for McCoy, too, in that, you know, part of me thought that had they supported him with, you know, better wide receivers and more weapons and maybe a different running game or what have you, you know, he could have been a successful quarterback, but that didn't happen. And then once they decided to make the draft pick with Whedon, you know, obviously his time was shortened here. And then, you know, clearly last week when the Browns went out and signed a dependable veteran in Jason Campbell, well, you know, that was certainly the end of Colt McCoy's tenure here.
Yeah, and they've made it pretty clear, Joe Banner has at least, that it is Brandon Whedon who gets the shot here to win the starting job. Again, I think no one is saying, and they're trying to position this in a way that, hey, he still has to earn this, he has to compete for this, and I don't think there's any doubt about that as this team begins its offseason program. And I think from the minute he set foot in the building yesterday, I think it was clear to him that, okay, I've got to show that I'm all aboard and I'm going to win this job, and I'm going to show these guys how I'm going to do it. So it's classroom stuff now, and then when they get on the field in a couple of weeks, you'll have to demonstrate it there. But as you look at the competition and Jason Campbell 71 starts, I mean, I just wonder how that's going to look when you talked about the side-by-side throwing of Whedon and McCoy and the dramatic difference there. But now it's Whedon and another big guy with a strong arm.
No kidding. Yeah, a guy who can not only look him in the eye, but then can throw that 15-yard out just as well as he can. So, and maybe this is as it should be, right, Vic? I mean, maybe this is what the Browns should have done last year, is bring in somebody of this caliber to press Brandon Whedon instead of saying, yeah, it's your job and you just got to hold on to it. Now he comes into camp with the thinking that, hey, I got somebody right on my rear end here, and not only is he, you know, as good physically as I am, he's made 71 career starts, which is like four times what I've made. So, yeah, this puts Brandon Whedon on guard, and I think that's a good thing. You know, competition is a great thing. We all like to be pushed. You know, you want to be challenged, and I think that's a smart thing for the Browns to do. And, you know, we've also seen, I don't know how many times over the last 10 to 14 years, Vic, where, you know, injuries pop up and suddenly number two is number one, or in some cases number three is number one. Right. So, you know, it's great to have that depth at that position. And I think in signing Campbell, the Browns have really upgraded the depth at that position.
Yeah, and you're right about this. It's a competition can only bring out the best. I don't think that Brandon Whedon came in with a cavalier attitude or necessarily laissez-faire. You know, I don't think he was here last year saying, I don't have to work at this, but it still matters when you know, when you have it in the deep recesses of your mind, that you've got to show something, that there is an expectation of people now that are judging you that didn't draft you, and you have to sell yourself to them. You have to make them know that you're legit as a starter, and then the other part of this is make them see that, okay, whatever this guy does with the 71 starts, here's what I have to offer, here's why I'm in this position and why I just came into this league as a first rounder last year.
Exactly.
And go about every day, every practice, every meeting, every interaction with coaches with that in mind.
And I think, you know, I think getting to know Brandon a little bit last year, Vic, I do think that he does have that spark inside of him. I do think he has that will to want to be the best that he can be. And I mean, let's not forget, you know, this guy from now until his last day in the NFL is going to be judged against this unbelievable once-in-a-generation quarterback class that just came out last year. So, you know, if you can't be motivated by that, then, you know, I don't know what I can do for you. But I do think, knowing Whedon a little bit as I do, is that he wants to be better. He wants to be great. He wants to show that he belongs in the company of that class with Luck and Griffin and Tannehill and right on down the line, Wilson. So, you know, I think this is good for him. I think this is good for, you know, and it's good for the Browns. I think they're about to find out, is this the guy or isn't he? And, you know, if we have to go through, if you go through a year where you all of a sudden decide early on that Brandon Whedon is not going to be our guy, well, now you've got the guy in the number two chair who can slide right in. You know, I don't think any of us wants it to get to that point where then all of a sudden here we are in 2014 evaluating the rookie quarterback class.
Yeah.
But I think this is good for all parties. I really do.
Tom Withers from the Associated Press joining us on the Revel Wireless Hotline here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. So, what does this mean to the draft? When you look at the Browns draft and you look at the options that they have at number six, and I think there are many, but now that you have what we look at their quarterback position versus the league's picture at quarterback, and that one is changing by the day. I mean, just in the last 48 hours alone, we've seen some major shuffling where teams that we thought were going into this draft needing a starting quarterback suddenly have guys with experience. I don't know that they've solved issues, but you recognize the names, the most recent being Carson Palmer, now part of the Arizona Cardinals, who, of course, I think they've gotten rid of five quarterbacks since they had Kurt Warner there. I mean, just think about that one. And then Kevin Cobb, who had been one of their recent starters, is now in Buffalo, presuming he's going to start there. And then Matt Flynn goes from Seattle as a backup to now a starter in Oakland. So where does it leave in teams like Oakland, of course, picking ahead of the Browns, teams that could be looking at quarterback, but The Eagles too. Are they set and solid with Michael Vick? So that's a question mark. They're picking.
It is really revolving, isn't it?
It is. And now I wonder what we look at for number six for the Browns, because Mockers have D. Milner going there, the corner from Alabama, or Deion Jordan going there, the defensive end from Oregon.
You know, it seems like Matt Flynn, by the way, has been with 10 teams since last year, doesn't it? I mean, it's just unbelievable. He was a name that was kicked around, you know, for pre-draft last year, free agency last year. So, anyway, yeah, this either complicates things or makes it a much clearer picture. I'm not sure which, Vic. There's obviously a great need for the Browns at cornerback, and I think there's no question that Milner appears to be the cream of the crop there. You know, whether he's still around at number six remains to be seen. You know, I think another good thing yesterday in terms of the Browns and making that trade is that they acquired a couple of more assets, because who knows, maybe somebody then before them on the draft board falls in love with Milner and you find yourself in a situation where you may feel like you have to move up, and, you know, at least you might have a couple picks that you could package together if that, you know, needed to be the case. But boy, this kind of leaves it wide open, and I wonder too, you know, with the additions of, you know, the offseason additions through free agency that the Browns made, you know, what that means in terms of this pick. You know, do they still need another outside rusher? You know, who's still available on the free agent market? They could, you know, be trying guys out right now, as far as I know. Sure. But, here we are, you know, 3 weeks away. I think it's pretty wide open, but if I would have to guess right now, I would think that Milner would be the target at number six. I don't think you can go wrong with a guy who played for 3 years with the top college program in the country and is clearly the best cornerback that you can put on the other side from Joe Hayden. Boy, that's something I think Browns fans could get very far behind.
I'm inclined to agree when I look at Milner and say, okay, he's the best corner in this draft. He might have that potential. But I'm also wondering if I need, you know, if he's one of those guys that doesn't show you completely when you study all the tape, and I've heard this from other scouts around the league, that, you know, is there this total, complete, no question, shutdown corner in D. Milner? I mean, I know there's a sense that he's the best of this crop, and corners are always at a premium. Is it more that than it might be the consistency of performance? And again, do you have that lockdown guy? Because to your other point, could this team – does it make sense for this team to get another pass rusher when you bring in a Paul Kruger via free agency, when you also have a Desmond Bryan on the defensive line, knowing he's a guy that's supposed to get you some push up front? See, when I look at Jabal Sheard and see him converting from defensive end to outside linebacker in this 3-4 scheme, I start to say, do you think you need somebody who's a little more of a definitive fit edge rusher, both in terms of body type? And this is where I look at Deion Jordan, 6'6" and like 250. You know, is he really more that prototype? And I know scouts are raving about him, about all that he can do physically, and, you know, rare athleticism, the size, the speed, the loose hips. You hear all those buzz terms about him, and fluid. I don't know. You know, part of me says I wouldn't hate him coming aboard at number 6.
No, I don't think you can go wrong with either one of those guys. I think it's good too, Vic, is that this new coaching staff is going to get a chance to see Jabal Sheard on the field. I know, you know, they're pretty limited in what they can do now during this voluntary workout, you know, off-season conditioning program. But I believe there is a mini camp at least leading into the draft. So at least they'll have a chance to maybe, you know, look at it a little, you know, at least to see the guy on the field and say, okay, you know, we're set here and let's target this guy. I mean, the guy that I've been banging the drum about for a long time is the left guard from Alabama, is Chance Warmack, who, of all the guys I watched last year in college football, and I probably watch more college football than the NFL only because those Saturdays are free, and I can watch college football as opposed to covering the Browns game on a Sunday. But Chance Warmack, to me, was the one guy who I thought played his position better than any player in college football last year. So, you know, while we think we might be set on that offensive line, boy, he's an intriguing guy as well. But I still come back to, in my mind, the greatest need right now is a cornerback to put on the other side of Joe Hayden, and Dean Milner is that guy.
Okay. Well, it will be interesting to see how this plays out and how it might change between now and draft day when we have
more. Don't hold your breath. I was going to say in the next hour for the way things are going these days in the NFL.
Exactly. We'll have more conversations about it. Tom, thank you so much.
Vic, anytime, bud.
He is Tom Withers from the Associated Press. He's joining us via the Revel Wireless Hotline here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. And we've got much more coming up on ESPN 850 WKNR.